Thank you, Your Honors. You know, when I talk to juries about doing their job when I'm closing, I talk to them about how innocent people get convicted of horrible crimes. And I tell them, because this is what I believe, that innocent people get convicted of horrible crimes because the people in the system don't do their jobs. And that starts with the investigation. It goes to the prosecutors, goes to the defense attorneys, judges, and ultimately when juries don't do their jobs.
But Ms. Holden, I have a lot of respect for you. But the problem I have with this as a hypothetical, actual innocence, of course, you know, that is a compelling thing, and at least one circuit has said that that will equitably toll the AEDPA requirement here. But how does your client prove actual innocence? He's thrown some distinguishing things that might be impeachment evidence on the wall. He's raised this concern, raised that concern. But where's the showing of actual innocence? Where's the new evidence that meets the Schlupp standard? I don't see it.
The evidence in this case, I think House talks to that. And I think that House actually answers most of those procedural questions in this case. But the House case talks about what is new evidence. And it first starts
I understand your point about House, but I'm talking about in this case the actual evidence. Where is the evidence of real, actual innocence in this case? I don't see anything in the record here that speaks to your client's actual innocence. As I said, there's lots and lots of things that talk about what I would call impeachment evidence or evidence that will perhaps raise some question in the mind of a jury, but that we're well past that now. We're talking now about if there's actual evidence. So if you had somebody that was convicted of a rape and it turns out that there is DNA evidence that shows that couldn't possibly be your client, that wasn't available before, something like that. Now, that's different. What in the evidence here shows that there was actual evidence so we even get to the question that you would like to raise on your appeal?
Well, in this case, there was absolutely no physical evidence connecting Larry Weaver to this offense. But what we were able to do 15 years later was to that actual innocence standard isn't the substantive actual innocence standard of Herrera. It's would a reasonable jury find this person guilty beyond a reasonable doubt?
No, isn't it the other way around? Isn't it that no reasonable jury could find, juror could find the person guilty, basically, in this case?
I think that if any juror heard the evidence in this case in the proper context, given and knew what Shorty Dye had when he started writing to law enforcement, was told that nothing that he told law enforcement was not in that newspaper.
But you're just trying to retry the case.
I think that on some level the actual innocence standard of Schlupp and House, when you're talking about whether any reasonable juror could find this person guilty beyond a reasonable doubt, what you're talking about is the evidence that's presented in a case and how that evidence was misrepresented, other evidence that could have been presented, evidence that the defense attorney had in her hands but didn't do anything about. All of that is new evidence under the House standard.
But I think what you're arguing in response to Judge Smith's question is legal insufficiency, that the evidence would not permit a rational jury to find by proof beyond a reasonable doubt that Weaver committed the murder. The Supreme Court said in Bowsley that actual innocence means factual innocence, not mere legal insufficiency. And I'm having a hard time understanding, as Judge Smith was suggesting, why you weren't basically just retrying the case on the basis of stronger impeachment evidence than may have been available the first time around. I mean, you got a lot from Judge Malloy in terms of that hearing.
Well, the factual evidence in this case, though, is that there are three other people who essentially confessed to this crime.
But your client confessed to three other people as well. He certainly made damning admissions when he was under the influence of intoxicants.
And I don't think that House requires that we have no bad evidence. But my client, Mr. Weaver, never said, I killed Jim Fremo. Dale Wallace and Gino Rochelle and Marvin Brandvold all...
He did say that he killed somebody, didn't
he?
He
said he killed somebody.
Yeah.
But he didn't say he killed Jim Fremo.
Well, I mean, maybe we should jail everybody who confessed to the Weaver, and then we know we got the right person for sure. But the problem here is he did make admissions out of his own lips, which tend to corroborate what Shorty Dye said, and which was corroborated by the crime scene evidence and the autopsy. So why doesn't that just go, as Judge Smith was suggesting, to additional impeachment evidence as opposed to proof of actual innocence?
Well, if you look at the quality of what Weaver said compared to, for example, what Dale Wallace said, and if the jury had known that Dale Wallace had actually pinpointed the exact place where the body was found, even though Captain Crego indicated that that wasn't the fact, if the jury had been aware of the emotion with which Dale Wallace confessed, if they had known, and again, where Captain Crego misrepresented the evidence to the jury, that Gino Rochelle and Dale Wallace had a beef against Jim Fremo because there was the belief in this group that he sexually molested these children.
But didn't some of that evidence come out at the trial? I mean, I was trying to parse through what's truly new and what's sort of adding an additional gloss on what the jury already heard.
What came out at the trial was that, oh, yeah, Dale said this. And then Captain Crego said, well, but then he told other people that he made this confession. But then when I talked to him, he said he didn't do it, and I just had to accept that. And then when he gets up at trial.
Ms. Borg, the defender, explained that the reason that, from a tactical standpoint, that she preferred to do it that way, to get that evidence in through cross-examination of Captain Crego, was she wasn't going to take the risk of calling a Wallace to the stand, ask him in front of the jury, isn't it true that you, sir, are the murderer, and then have him say, absolutely not, I didn't do it.
Well, if you're going to do it the way that she did it, then you also put in that he's having nightmares, that you put him in the right location, you don't let Captain Crego explain away the fact that there's no problems with his feet, that he says, no, absolutely, there's no evidence that these children were sexually abused. You don't let him imply that Dale Wallace didn't have him in the right location. If you were going to use that tactic, then you get the evidence right. And when they try to back up on you, you say, but wait a second, in this report, didn't you say this?
This all goes to the merits of the underlying alleged constitutional violations and ineffective assistance of counsel, correct?
They are different claims
in this case. You got to get through the door first.
Right.
And I would like you to tell me what new evidence there is that you would present at a new trial that would support your claim of actual innocence. What's the new evidence?
I would put in that Dye had that newspaper article before he wrote the
letter. Okay, let's talk about the newspaper articles for just a minute.
Pardon?
Let's talk about the newspaper articles. Now, there was some discussion at the trial about the newspaper articles, correct?
Except that Dye was allowed to imply that the newspaper...
No. My question was, there was some discussion at the trial about the newspaper articles, right?
There was some discussion.
And in fact, three of them were admitted into evidence, correct?
Yes.
All right. Now, can you tell me today which article it was that Mr. Dye saw or read before he met with the local sheriff who came to visit him?
I am confident that it is that first article that was Exhibit 1 at the evidentiary hearing.
How do we know that?
Because in the context of that first letter that he wrote, And I think that that's, you know, if you look at Captain Crego's testimony at the evidentiary hearing, I think it's certainly implicit in that.
Okay. At trial, though, we know that Dye testified that, I think it's at trial, maybe at the evidentiary hearing. You can correct me if I'm wrong, but he testified that Weaver sent him an article. The first time he ever saw an article was when Weaver sent him an article, and Dye's name was in the article, and that's why Weaver had sent him the article, because Dye's name was.
And the only reason Dye's name would be in an article is because he had already talked to law enforcement.
But that had happened years later, correct?
Dye talked to law enforcement about 3 years after the fact.
About 3 years later.
Yes, but
so at trial, Dye testified that he hadn't seen any articles.
No, he testified that he had seen an article with his name in it, but in his
You're correct. I'm sorry. He didn't point to any articles around the time of the killing.
And in his first interview with Officer Davenport down in Georgia, he indicated that he had a newspaper article. That was before Weaver was ever charged, before there were ever any newspaper articles.
Now, that was all brought out at trial, though. I mean, what's his name was on? Dye was on the stand, correct?
Yes.
And wasn't he thoroughly cross-examined?
No.
He wasn't.
He was cross-examined, certainly not effectively or thoroughly.
Well, I gather you would do it differently now, knowing what you know.
And frankly, as you
I mean, there was every out, opportunity to impeach him with all of this.
Yes.
Correct? At least
yes.
With the articles that they had at the time.
Yes. But that doesn't make this not new evidence.
But, Ms. Holden-Knight, with all respect, Judge Pius had just asked you what new evidence there was. You brought out the newspaper article. He's pointed out that the newspaper article was talked about at trial. And as you know, and I'm quoting from Slupp, it must be new, reliable evidence, whether it be exculpatory, scientific evidence, trustworthy eyewitness accounts, or critical physical evidence that was not presented at trial.
But House...
I know about House, but I'm simply saying that the whole concept of Schlupp is, if you've got a real miscarriage of justice here, some evidence comes up that shows that this person just couldn't have done this. This is just wrong. That's what this is about. But... You're being the able advocate that you are, what you're really doing is saying, you know, I'd have tried this or whoever tried it. This should have been tried differently. We'd like to present the evidence to a different jury, spin it a little different way. But that's not what Schlupp is about. That's not the actual innocent standard, notwithstanding House.
I think that the evidence that the jury heard in this case was misleading. And this is a miscarriage of justice.
That's the whole purpose of defense counsel in a criminal trial, though, is to make certain that any evidence presented by the government is cross-examined, examined in any way it could possibly be done by the defense counsel to show that the evidence is misleading or incorrect in some other way. You can argue whether defense counsel did a good or a bad job, and I know since you have an IAC claim you'd like to bring, you think the defense counsel did a very bad job. But the fact is almost every criminal trial runs that risk. That's just, we're all humans, people do a better or a worse job. But you cannot get past the AEDPA problem here unless you've got a real, clear, exculpatory set of new evidence that's going to get your client off. And where's the new evidence? I mean, I've gone through all this information. I've got pages and pages and pages of notes. And in every instance, you've got a little gloss here and you've got a little gloss there, but it was all in there before. It's just a question of how you want to look at it. I don't see any new evidence that is exculpatory. Where am I missing something?
I think that the jury was presented with evidence that was incorrect. To correct that evidence is new evidence under House.
I understand your semantic difference, but what is exculpatory of your client? Clearly, scientifically or otherwise exculpatory. You're saying you think it would influence the way the jury would view the evidence. But it is not, is it, clearly exculpatory of your client?
The fact that not one single, that Shorty Dye was not able to give law enforcement one single piece of physical evidence that panned out that was not in that newspaper article. In addition to the other things that were...
I want to be clear about one thing. When we talk about that newspaper article, at the evidentiary hearing, there was an Exhibit 1 admitted, which was a newspaper article. And it was dated dated Saturday, the 13th of November, 1993.
Right.
Was that newspaper article admitted at trial?
I don't believe so, Your Honor. I will tell you, I am not positive whether or not.
You've been in this record for a lot longer than I have, correct?
I have been, yes. I don't believe so.
You can't tell me today that this article was... Okay, now...
I could if I went through my record.
When you go to the actual trial transcript, okay,
mm-hmm.
on February 9th, 1998, at the trial, there's a reference made to three newspaper articles that were admitted at the trial.
Mm-hmm.
There were exhibits, State's Exhibit 21... State's Exhibit 22 and State's Exhibit 23. And State's Exhibit 23 is a November 8th.
November 13th?
Yes. So we don't have... So this article was not admitted? I guess not. No. State's 23 is a November 13th newspaper article.
And that's that one.
The same one?
Yes. That's the only one. Pardon?
So it was admitted at trial.
Yes, yes. With that record, yes.
The only record we have, isn't
it? Yeah. Well, I just couldn't remember before.
Ms. Holton, before you sit down, let me ask you a policy question.
Mm-hmm.
We have heretofore ducked the issue as to whether entitlement to pass through the Schlupp gateway requires proof of due diligence. Should we resolve that question in this case?
I think House resolves that question. House talks about how the 2254 requirements don't apply to an actual innocence claim. So I think that House answers that question.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Hey, please the court. My name is Mark Fowler, Assistant Attorney General for the State of Montana. And going to the matter that Judge Tallman just raised, the state disagrees with that characterization of House.
Shocked. I think you would take that position.
I'm likewise stunned.
House, of course, does not answer that. 2254 in House was a actual innocence claim that was brought in the regarding a procedural default. The court left open whether or not it would apply, the same analysis applied to the procedural bar that's presented by statute of limitations. That's still an open question. And to, I guess, sort of...
Those are hard questions, right? You may not need to get there, correct?
No, Your Honor, you may not. And the state will admit that you need not, if, which is the first argument of the state's brief, you need not reach that issue if you find there's absolutely no basis to pursue an actual innocence claim.
So we should just let that one lie for some future panel.
Your Honor, I would like to be a good advocate in perhaps parroting another advocate earlier this morning that said I'm asking a lot. And I would ask Your Honors to consider making a declaration, clarifying the law regarding actual innocence as it relates to statute of limitations.
Well, let me ask you this. We could find no new evidence, nothing that meets the Schlepp standard, however modified by House, that would show that Mr. Weaver is actually innocent under the Schlepp standard. If that's what we find in the record, we don't have to get into any of the rest of this, do we? Isn't that the end of the story?
Yes, this appeal ends, if I understand your question. This appeal ends if you make a determination. There is not a showing at the threshold of the gateway.
Yeah, exactly. So, in other words, we don't even need to get to all the other policy issues and so on. If when you look at the totality of evidence here, there's just no evidence that would meet the Schlepp standard. End of story, right?
Yes, Your Honor, clearly. From as a judicial economy, there's no reason to waste any time.
Well, let's talk about judicial economy, because it's not easy to resolve claims of actual innocence. And this case is a good example. I think Ms. Holton has done a pretty good job of marshaling some arguments here that maybe her client is innocent. Does that mean that every time a habeas petitioner comes to federal court and says, I'm actually innocent, he or she is entitled to a full evidentiary hearing, as Judge Malloy ordered in this case, without any showing that he has diligently pursued his claim heretofore?
If I understand your question, it should not be the case that a habeas claimant comes forth an actual innocence claim and is not able to show basic elements of equitable tolling that the Supreme Court has stated. One, that the petitioner has been diligently pursuing their right to state court. And two, there's some extraordinary circumstance that prevented that petitioner from raising the claim. In what case would a petitioner not be able to show that already? It should be the requirement of all habeas petitioners who claim actual innocence to at the, I would like to call it the threshold of the gateway analysis, to show I could not bring this for this reason. Particularly as an example, House in Tennessee, who perhaps didn't have the availability of DNA evidence of the blood and urine showing that the victim's husband, not he, committed the crime, the rape and the murder, as well as two other witnesses who I believe recanted some of the testimony under oath.
And Weaver made no effort to explain why he took this long to bring his claim, did he?
Your Honor, no. Not only did not make any effort to explain why it took so long, not making an explanation why, in fact, those claims, I should be careful not to say legal claim, but those contentions about innocence were raised in the state court. These are the factual contentions of innocence here are the same claims raised in the trial court in a motion for new trial that was entered pro se by Mr. Weaver, claiming he could be exonerated if the 16 other witnesses came forward. It was the same claim raised, admittedly via through a Strickland versus Washington analysis of ineffective assistance of counsel in post-conviction, but they were the same claims. Not enough witnesses came forward. These other witnesses should have been pursued with live testimony, would have had a greater emotional impact. And the Montana Supreme Court said no, that will not get you anywhere. And it's for that reason the state here, as a policy consideration, would ask the court to at least look at this case as perhaps the vehicle in which to clarify the law of actual innocence, because of the waste of judicial resources, because Schlupp is not a document announcement of jurisdiction that sits outside AEDPA for some reason, that the habeas court is exercising habeas jurisdiction completely outside AEDPA. Now, House did clarify that AEDPA does not supplant the analysis in Schlupp. However, that doesn't mean AEDPA is totally irrelevant, particularly the standards of deference under 2254E.
These policy questions are difficult issues, and my own preference is if I don't have to go there, I prefer not to. But we'll see.
Yes, Your Honor.
That's just my own sort of sense. But what I'm interested in, what strikes me about the claim here for the gateway is the attack is really on Mr. Dodd.
Correct.
Mr. Dye was the heart of the state's case. I mean, there was all this other evidence about these other characters. But the one that put the case over the line was
granted.
Dye's testimony. And so the attack here is on Mr. Dye.
Yes.
And the question and the claim is that they've got new evidence to show that Mr. Dye was a liar, that he lied through his teeth. He lied to his teeth so he could get, you know, the benefits of a deal in his own situation and whatnot. Now, Mr. Dye testified at the trial, correct? And the whole attack here is that, well, he knew about this. The reason why he was able to come off with his story was because he knew about this murder. And he got the details of the murder by reading the newspaper articles.
Weaver supplied him.
Yes. Now, when I read, you know, I tried my best to try to figure out what happened at the trial and look at the newspaper articles and the claims that have been raised in this proceeding at the district court. It looks, you really can't tell other than through his own testimony at trial, what articles he may have actually considered or read. In trial, at the trial, he only testified that he had read an article that had been presented that Mr. Weaver sent him where his name was mentioned, but that doesn't help Mr. Weaver's case at all. And there's no evidence at the trial, as far as I can tell, as to which articles he may have read or had before him, before he even met with the investigator.
With respect, no, Your Honor, I think there is evidence here to indicate, and the State would agree with Ms. Holton, that it's the November 13th article in the Missoulian by Michael Moore, which at least that has been shown was probably the article that is referred to among State's exhibits 20, 21, 22, and 23. I believe the other exhibits simply were not found in the habeas proceedings to present to the court. But the evidence of exactly what was mentioned can be inferred from the closing argument of the State's counsel, particularly Josh Vanderwetering, who is now a USA. You're familiar with Mr. Vanderwetering. But in the rebuttal argument, you can determine this point-by-point analysis of what was in Dye's testimony that was not in the media. And I can go over them for you clearly here today if you wish. And that was presented to the jury. So I think by inference, you can deduce what article is referred to.
But did Dye, is there evidence, though, that Dye actually had that article, that he read that article before he met with the investigator?
It's said that there's evidence in the record at trial. The trial record at 495 would be your electronic PDF page 124. That Weaver sent the article after Dye sent his first letter to Detective Krieger, which would have been October 10th, 1995. And so the article was sent, according to this portion of the transcript, after Dye had sent the first letter to Krieger, indicating all these facts. What's most pertinent, of course, you turn your attention to Dye's testimony, if you will, Your Honor, that all these other confessions, these other witnesses and suspects, occur after the body is found November 17th, and you're well aware of that. What's critical here, which is never discussed by a petitioner in either the briefing or the hearing or here today, really effectively, I think, is the fact that Weaver had confessed to killing a person and covering up with brush, and that conversation occurred before the body was found and occurred somewhere between October 17th and October 31st, 1993. The body was found about a week or two later. So, and there are additional facts that were fleshed out that also tie in and actually strengthen the case of the State. So, in some degree, the State, not believing that a hearing should have taken place, so it was somewhat of a debt of gratitude to Judge Malloy for actually making the State's case stronger. Your Honor, have any more questions about the details of the record, specifically in regard to Dye's testimony? I'd be happy to try to.
The only question I have is your response to Judge Pius's question and your earlier comments suggest that, indeed, what I was suggesting earlier, your opposing counsel, that basically all of this evidence was introduced at the trial. What you're really looking at here is a different spin on the same information. Is there anything that you see in the record brought in by Mr. Weaver that suggests that there is new exculpatory evidence of any kind that has been brought into the record here that would meet a Schlupp standard?
No, by a fair reading of Schlupp and what exactly is new evidence, there is no new evidence here, Your Honor. There is new delivery of evidence. There is a stronger jury summation by a very capable trial attorney and appellate advocate, but a stronger jury summation of greater rhetorical vigor does not make an actual innocence showing. And for that reason, Your Honors, we would, the State of Montana would ask that you please affirm the denial based upon the statute of limitations.
Schlupp doesn't give defendants the right to a new trial because they think it should have been tried differently, does it?
Not at all, Your Honor. Specifically because of their very nature of the actual innocence showing and the longstanding jurisprudence of habeas, that the concentration of societal resources at a moment in time before a jury still within the realm of human fallibility, is a critical, decisive event. If the court were to allow this type of showing to expand the Schlepp standard, then effectively habeas courts become screening vehicles for circumstantial evidence cases in state trials.
You know, I guess what I was trying to get at was I had thought when I first looked at this that the claim was the new evidence, at least with respect to Mr. Dodd, was that it wasn't clear at the trial that he had actually seen newspaper articles about the murder, and that the new evidence was that, yes, we can show that he did, before he met with the investigators, he learned everything about the murder through the newspaper article. But in fact, what it seems to show is that he all this was brought out at the trial, or some of it was brought out at the trial.
You know, there are several significant facts brought forth in the October 10th first letter to Detective Krieger that were not in the newspaper article before this court, which is the November 13th article. And those were verified, if not, there was evidence produced that strongly suggested the strong credibility in the entire story that Dye told, not inconsistently told, not just to Detective Krieger in the letter, but to Detective Davenport, the local sheriff in Georgia, and then again to Detective Krieger when Krieger went to Georgia, and then before the jury. It's a consistent story full of facts that only the murderer would know that is not revealed in the November 13th article.
Right.
Several significant facts, including the old Army rifle, Czechoslovakian rifle that was pawned on October the 11th, indisputably pawned, by a gentleman who was close friends with Weaver. The location, the terrain, was looked at by the investigators and testified at trial that it matched Guy's story about the location of the body, where the body was dumped from a high vantage point looking down to see, I mean, exactly conformed to the way that Guy's story panned out. And while there was not a fireplace found where the actual murder site was, Guy talked about that the body was moved a quarter mile from the place that Fremu died or was murdered and where the body was eventually dumped, that there was a creek running by the place of the murder, that where Weaver had washed his hands. There is, in fact, a creek there. I mean, there were copious other facts. Okay. Your Honor, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. I'll give you 2 minutes. No, just 2 minutes.
Thank you, Your Honor. Regarding the question on whether the AEDPA standards apply, I briefed that there's a whole series in my briefing on that, but I would direct the Court to Head Note 8 in the House case. It would be at 2078 in Court Reporter, where they talk, where the Supreme Court talks about the statutory requirements of AEDPA and then talks about how those do not apply to talking about clear and convincing evidence on a second or subsequent petition, and also the evidentiary hearing. And Justice Kennedy says, neither provision addresses the type of petition at issue here, a first federal habeas petition seeking consideration of defaulted claims based on showing of actual innocence. Thus, the standard of review in these provisions is inapplicable, and cites Lockhart v. Thomas for the proposition that dismissal of a first federal habeas petition is a particularly serious matter. I think that goes to the point made by this Court in Majoy that this is an exception to those the actual innocence standard is an exception to those statutory requirements.
But the statutory scheme, and you find it throughout AEDPA, speaks of both due diligence and facts that would not convince a trier that the defendant was guilty. And I'm still having a hard time why you want to write out the due diligence requirement.
As I argue in my brief, when when the Congress enacted those provisions of AEDPA, it legislated against the backdrop of Schlupp. And they put those due diligence requirements into a second or subsequent proceeding. They left them out of the first.
What? You're saying that Congress legislated against the background of Schlupp when it passed AEDPA?
When it put in those provisions, yes, on the second or subsequent provisions. And it's in my reply brief, I believe, at pages 7 and 8, where I discuss where this Court, I think, discussed it in Majoy, and then more recently in Johnson v. Knowles. Let's see. And regarding, I respectfully disagree with Mr. Fowler. I think it's very clear from the first interview with Davenport and Shorty Dye that Shorty Dye had access to that November 13th article prior to the time that he wrote that initial letter.
But that doesn't respond to the point that your opponent made, that in the October 13 letter to Captain Krigo, there were details that only the killer could know, which were not included in the subsequent.
And I addressed that in my reply brief, Your Honor, where the only things that could be documented were what was in that article. Everything else is something that you could make up with a vivid imagination, or frankly, that just didn't pan out. And I argue that in my reply brief.
Okay.
We'll take a look at it.
Thank you very much.
Thank you,
Ms. Very, very helpful.
Our next case for argument is Confederated Tribes of the Colville Indian Reservation versus the Confederated Tribes and Bands of the Yakima Indian Nation.